It is 105. Welcome back to the program. 570 News Midday here on 570 News. We're in studio now with Kristen Clark from the 570 Newsroom, as well as Joe Pavia, the news director here at 570 News. How are you guys doing? Joe, you brought notes.
I just wanted to remember what I wanted to say. That's all. I have three words.
Let it be on the record.
I'll
that
surprise you.
You are the first person for the Throwback Thursday panel to bring notes into the studio.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I thought there'd be more.
I thought so too.
Okay. Well, do I get a prize?
There should be something, a gold star or something for you. The Throwback Thursday panel, we kind of look back at some of the topics that we talked about earlier in the week and in the weeks past that were kind of hot. And one of the things that had a lot of people scratching their heads, if I can put it that way, was the fact that there was a study that was released that ranked Canada number two in the world when it came to customer service. And I'm just looking at my sheet here, even the way producer Neil Adams wrote this, Canada number two in customer service, 3 question marks. That says it all right there. What kind of customer service are we talking about? And I mean, do we really have that great of customer service here in this country?
I'll think when you look at something like this and you seem so surprised from it, people remember bad service. They don't really highlight the good service because you kind of expect that. When you go to a restaurant, you expect, you know, your waitress or waiter to make eye contact with you. You know, you don't expect to be waiting too long for your food. But the moment you are, where's my discount? You know,
right,
like
exactly.
What's happening? And you're going to remember that. So when you hear that, oh, service is great in Canada, you're thinking, I remember that one time 2 weeks ago. I was waiting in line forever. The lady was obviously having a bad day, didn't even look me in the eye. And that's what you remember. So I think that's why people might be shocked by that statistic.
It's interesting because this study ranked what was important to Canadians when they consider, when they think of what good customer service is. And the number one answer that came back was the quickness of service, yeah. The prompt. Do you think that's the number one thing when it comes to good customer service?
Yes and no. I mean, it depends. You know, if you're at a restaurant and you're with friends and you're talking, really the atmosphere is, well, the atmosphere is important, but the service is almost secondary. If somebody doesn't come up right away, you know, if you're talking for 20 minutes and, hey, no one's coming to ask you if you want a drink, then it's annoying, really. If it's, I don't know what the time is. It kind of depends. If I'm really hungry or really thirsty, darn it, I want my drink order now. But other times it doesn't really fly. It doesn't matter.
I think there's a couple of ways of looking at this. If you are going into a store, if you are calling somebody with a complaint, then the quickness and the promptness is the number one priority. You want
yes.
your complaint resolved
exactly.
right away. If you're going for dinner and you know it's a birthday dinner, well, you expect, you know, sometimes it's like, who cares? We have, you know, 2-3 hours here to sit down, relax, chat, then, and all of a sudden the quickness and the promptness of the service doesn't matter all that much.
In fact, I find it annoying when, and I don't know if this has happened to you, you go to a restaurant and they almost want you to leave.
I've had that experience before, yeah, where it's like, get you in and right away, hi, so do you know what you're having? It's like, we just sat down. You haven't brought me a menu yet, so no, I don't know what I'm having. Phone lines are open, 519-570-2545, locally, out of town, 1-800-570-5715, star 570 by cell, and you can fire me an email, eric@570news.com.
Hey, I got a question for you about this survey. New Zealand's number one. I never hear about New Zealand.
Ever.
How
I don't know.
How accurate is this? People in Australia call people in New Zealand wankers. Like, I know for that for a fact.
Do you? Have you been to Australia?
No, I know Australians.
Yeah. I don't know.
I've never even been to New Zealand. I wouldn't know how to compare
somebody,
the service
somebody
to
called
it.
Me yeah. yesterday. Somebody called me yesterday and said, sure, Canada is number two in customer service. If we're basing this on two countries alone, then we're
sure.
number two.
Yeah.
And again, I think it has to do with whether you're complaining or whether you're just going in to have a dinner somewhere. I'll tell you this. I told this story yesterday. I went to Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, everybody likes to use Tim Hortons as an example because it's something that everybody has in common.
Right.
But I was at a Tim Hortons in St. Catharines. And because I think customer service goes both ways. I don't think it's just you walking into a store expecting great service. I think it's also on us a little bit
yeah,
to be
get
kind.
Get off your phone,
oh, for sure.
Look them in the
exactly.
eye, be nice.
So I go to a Tim Hortons in St. Catharines, and I could not believe how great the service was. I mean, this person on the other side of the counter asked me how my day was going, if there's anything else he could do and all this. And I actually took the time when I got home to, I got his name when I was there. And when I got home, I took the time, went online, found that particular store, found the manager and emailed the manager and said, this person that served me today, we'll call him John. You need more people like John working at your store because he made my day. And it's true. He made my day. Have you ever? But it's so funny that you mentioned, Christine, that we never remember the good services. I remember that service. I'll never forget that service.
I guess it's just when you have a bad service experience. Like, for example, this past weekend, I went out for brunch with a few friends in Toronto. And, I mean, we weren't even asked if we wanted water for a good 10, 20 minutes. We were completely ignored. The place was empty. And one of the dishes that came didn't have the main course on it. And there was just so many things that were like, it just stood out to being so unpleasant. And I just think that's when people hear this stat, like, oh, Canada's number two in the world. They're like, well, I beg to differ, you know. Yeah.
So much, it depends on that experience that you have and also the location that you go to. Because I've been shopping at we'll just call it a generic chain restaurant.
Right.
Or just generic chain store. And I will specifically go to one because it is bigger. There's that less sense of opportunity of what I termed, or what I heard the term was butt brush. Butt brush meaning that the aisles are big enough that you're not going to run into anyone. And that's actually, that was a retailer told me that's an accurate term. It's called butt brush because I had to ask him and I never forgot it. But I went to, and like you said, you remember the good ones. And I do have a lot of good ones, you know, and I write them down. And I will, like you, I will send emails and so on. But I also remember the bad ones because I still scratch my head and I wonder, why are you so cranky? Why are you working in this scenario, in be it retail, in customer service, let's
whatever,
call it,
yeah,
when you are miserable? Go get a job somewhere else where you don't have to look at anybody.
Where you have to deal with people on a minute-to-minute basis. Now, if you're wondering, the U.S. ranked number 14 on this list. So if we're number two, feel sorry for the folks south of the border. The U.S. ranks number 14. Here's something else that we talked about earlier this week that also had a lot of response. And this came about because Arlene Dowell from the newsroom posted a post on Facebook where she talked about her five-year-old coming home after a practice drill for the lack of a better way of putting it, it was an active shooter practice drill happening in her son's school, who's 5 years old. And she posted on Facebook how it hit her that, you know, my goodness, what's happening to this world where five-year-olds now have to learn about this this kind of thing. So, and we had so many calls of people saying, you know, I don't know why you're surprised. This is a good thing. Yeah. People should be learning about this. We should know what to do in case something happens. And 5 years old isn't too young. Would you agree that 5 years old isn't too young to know about this kind of stuff?
I think for the kid themselves, they need to learn it. And I can understand why the parents would be a little bit upset, being like, oh, my goodness, my child who just recently started school, if you think about it, is all of a sudden in this real world. And I'm trying to protect him or her from it. But I do think it's important that the children know that this is a possibility. I mean, I was in several lockdowns when I was in school. And,
really?
And it's, you need to know what to do, because when it's just a drill, it's, oh, okay, but okay, this is what we do, this is what we do. But when it's actually happening, it's, you want to know what to do.
I don't know if that's just being unlucky, being in a lockdown, or has the world really changed that much? Because when I was in elementary school, not a single lockdown. We didn't even have a fire. We did fire drills, but I never, ever remember there being a legitimate fire. And the only drill I ever remember doing is a fire drill. I never once was there, like people emailed me yesterday and said, I remember doing air raid drills back in my day and all this, you know, all this other stuff. I don't remember anything but fire drills.
I don't remember anything but fire drills as well. And I think it is a good idea to do these active shooter drills. I know it's mandated in a number of states since Newtown, Connecticut happened. And actually, that school, from the notes that I brought, guys, indicated that, and I didn't realize this, I guess, that they had an active shooter drill about a week or two before the actual shooting took place. And so that's why they commended the one teacher for taking the students into the closet in the school. So, but having said that, though, with the active shooter drills, how is it being taught? How is it being presented for a five-year-old and a 14-year-old,
exactly.
like a kid
be
in
very
grade
different.
9.
Yeah.
I would imagine it would mm-hmm. be different, but it would be interesting to find out how they do that as well, because I'm sure as a 5-year-old kid, you certainly, it would scare you a lot. You'd probably have dreams of somebody chasing you or, you know, there's somebody trying to shoot you, depending on how it is presented.
Perhaps. But with what Arlene was saying, that, you know, she said that her son wasn't really upset by it. In mm-hmm. fact, she was stunned by how much he retained based on what they were told. Like, he was telling her, you know, this is a code red. This is what a code red means. This is what we have to do. And when this happens, and the principal would go around and lock the class. And she was just flabbergasted by the amount of information that her son was able to retain and remember. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe 5 is the right age, because maybe we're kind of carefree at that age, and we don't really take it too seriously. Whereas at 14, maybe then you start thinking, oh my goodness, is this going to happen? Can this happen? Like, we know they're doing it mm-hmm. in university, and in universities they should be doing it, and they have full out blown campaigns where they have filmed and produced videos, dramatized videos showing what you do. So at that level, I say for sure. I think the takeaway here is, my goodness, what has this turned to that we now have to be telling our 5-year-olds that there are bad people out there? And I know it's reality, but that, mm-hmm. Geez, everybody in this room knows it's reality. We work in news media. We read this stuff every day. But what, I mean, it's a scary time is what I'm trying to say.
It is. But I mean, even I think I was 8, my first lockdown drill, and it was just something I grew up with, was this is what happens, so you know what to do if it's going to happen. And for me, like, I can understand why it would be kind of scary for the parents to be like, oh my goodness, this is a realization, my child is a part of it now. But it is necessary. And growing up, I mean, yes, you're kind of afraid it's going to happen, but it's, you kind of have that safety knowing you know what to do if mm-hmm. it does happen.
All right, it is 1:17. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about fire drills. Or not fire drills, active shooter drills. Fire drills we should keep doing. Active shooter drills, emergency scenario drills being taught at school as early as 5. And when we come back, we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the other news that came down earlier this week, which was, of course, the 2-year-old Brooklyn Hondrich that was found. Good news story. And we had a conversation on the station about how do you lose a child, and a lot of you chimed in on that as well. We'll be back with much more here on 570 News. All right, welcome back. It is 1:22 here on 570 News, midday on 570 News. Coming up at 1:35, John Molinaro, Sportsnet chief soccer reporter, will be joining me. We have players filing lawsuits over the Women's World Cup that'll be held in Canada next year over the fact that they have to play on turf and not real grass. Some are saying it's discrimination against women. We'll be talking about that coming up at 1:35. Right now, it's the Throwback Thursday panel in studio with Christine Clark of the 570 Newsroom and Joe Pavia, the news director here at 570 News. We talked about the customer service, Canada ranking 2nd in the world. Yes, 2nd in the world. And now we were talking about the emergency scenarios being taught at school, practice drills for active shooters, etc. Arlene Dowell has a 5-year-old son who came home and told her about their emergency scenario drill, and it kind of shocked her, and I think it shocks a lot of parents. And I did want to make this clear. I don't think anybody has said or is saying that we shouldn't be doing them. I think the point is that it's shocking
sure.
that 5-year-olds yeah. have to know about this kind of stuff because of how much the world has changed. The other thing that we talked about that got a lot of response was, of course, the good news story that 2-year-old Brooklyn Hondrich was found south of Woodstock after she went missing in a cornfield right. for, what was it? I think from 7 p.m. to 10 a.m. the yeah. next morning, something like that. And a lot of people thought, okay, well, finally a great news story, because I think a lot of people's heads were going to Tori Stafford at that sure. point. But it begs the question. Parents lose kids all the time, at least for a couple of minutes in department stores, for example. And we pose that question, how do you lose a child? I don't know if perhaps you wandered away when you were young or if your parents ever lost you guys.
Definitely.
But yeah, it's happened.
It's happened. My grandparents, like my Grammy and Grampy, live out in New Brunswick, and they just have a large forest as their backyard, essentially. And your kids, you're playing, you go exploring, you go a little bit too far. Mom and dad are just sitting on the deck. And then all of a sudden, where's Christine? And you start hearing the yells. And I mean, it was never anything serious, but kids wander away. I mean, I was a kid and I wandered away. You get curious and you don't think of telling mom or dad because you don't see the danger in it.
No, you're three, especially, or you're four, whatever.
Exactly. Especially when you're a toddler, you are just curious.
You think it's fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it drives parents nuts. And we had callers say, look, I was at a department store. I told my son, stay right there. Don't move. I turned around for 15 seconds to look at a shirt. I turned back and he was gone.
And that's all it takes. Yeah. 15 seconds takes. Is not an exaggeration. No. Yeah. That's all it takes.
Joe, do you have any?
You're so focused on what you're doing that you're not, for a second, you're worrying, does this shirt fit, that you're not worrying about your son or daughter. Now, I had my own experience, like Christine. My mother was in a complete panic when she thought she lost me. But what had actually happened, and it was a preschool, was that we were in the house. It was lunchtime. My sisters had come home for lunch. There was some other kids there. And I accidentally soiled myself. So risking the thought that, ooh, I was going to get in
trouble, yeah,
because of what happened, I hid under my mom and dad's bed. She couldn't find me. I'll be really quiet and they won't find me. So I think I was probably out for about an hour before either my mother sniffed me out or heard me under right. the bed because a broom came underneath. And
okay.
Yes, and there was a lot of Italian yelling going on at the time. So that was that was my story. My mother doesn't remember that, which is fine.
Really?
No.
And you were young?
I haven't reminded
them. You were young?
I wasn't in school at the time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
This was early 70s. It was a long time ago.
Let's take a phone call. This is Jackie. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I just wanted to chime in on the situation with the young girl that went missing. I had my own experience with my little boy or when he was like less than a year old. I asked somebody to watch him, and we're at a crowded beach, and they took their eye off him, and next thing you know, he made it almost down to the water with all these people. It was terrifying. But the one thing I learned, and I was a young mom, and the one thing I learned from there is there are no excuses for losing your child. Like, I would constantly, I guess the fear of almost losing him then, I would always make sure my eyes wouldn't be off for 2 minutes. Like, there he is. If you're going shopping and you want to buy a shirt, the baby or child should be in a stroller. Or, you know, you leave, if you're going to be doing a big shopping, you leave your child at home in the care of somebody else. It just bothers me. You know, when parents say, I just turned away for a minute, when you hear these stories every day,
mm-hmm.
when are parents going to learn that one person takes responsibility? If I'm out with my husband, with my grandson now, I take the responsibility. I don't say, oh, we both watch him. I go, no, I'm going to watch him.
Yeah.
And he watches him too, but it's like, I'm the one taking responsibility. He's not going to get out of my sight, especially if there's a crowded area and that sort of thing. So I just wish there was more focus on parents taking responsibility and stop using an excuse. Because if you lose your child, it doesn't matter what the excuse is.
Gotcha, yeah. Jackie. Thanks so much for the phone call. We're right out of time, but it's kind of like when you hear people leaving their kids in their car.
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard about that. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, that's beyond me, but it happens. So I think Jackie's right. I think, you know,
at some point
it's the excuses. Thanks so much for doing this, guys.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
We'll be back with much more on 570 News. All right, welcome back. It is 1:35 here on 570 News, midday on 570 News. Thanks so much for being along. A group of elite players has filed a lawsuit in Canada challenging plans to play the 2015 Women's World Cup on artificial turf. It's a turf battle, if you will. Players led by U.S. Women's National Team forward Abby Wambach filed Wednesday in the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal in Toronto. And so now this has been making some headlines. Joining me on the line is John Molinaro, the Sportsnet chief soccer reporter. John, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing very well. This is something that's been making some headlines. Basically, they don't want to play on turf. That's the gist of it, right?
That's basically the gist of it. They're claiming that it's discriminatory because, you know, the Men's World Cup and the men don't play on artificial turf. They play on grass. And, they're just upset that every game at next summer's FIFA Women's World Cup that's going to be staged on Canada is going to be played on artificial turf as opposed to grass. So, you know, the lawsuit is obviously geared towards challenging that notion and trying to change it.
Wouldn't that have been known, John, before Canada received the World Cup?
Yes, it would have been known. So that's the thing. I mean, I understand that they're upset about this, but... when FIFA was considering the bids, and it was known full well that this tournament was going to be played on artificial turf. The other thing too is that Zimbabwe was the only other nation that sort of submitted a bid to host the tournament, and eventually it pulled out because the country at the time was politically and economically unstable. So Canada won this by default. So the alternative, if Zimbabwe had stayed in the tournament, would have been to play in Zimbabwe with grass. But you're talking about a country that's, as I said, politically unstable. So I'm not sure, you know, I appreciate that the women are upset about having to play on artificial turf, but the alternative was to play somewhere else where their lives would have been made in danger.
Do these women, when they're playing their normal league matches, are they playing on natural grass?
Some of them are, but some of them are playing on artificial turf as well. So I think you'll find that a lot of the women are playing on artificial turf, either, and they're training on artificial turf as well during, you know, practices. It's not an uncommon practice in clubs, both men and women, to sort of train on an artificial surface. So they're certainly used to playing and training on the surface. As I said, I'm fully sympathetic, and I appreciate that they don't want to play, you know, the Women's World Cup, which is the marquee event in the women's game, on artificial surf. But I'm not sure what the alternative is here right now.
You know, it's interesting because, as you point out, the argument is, well, the men got to play on real grass, so we should get to play on real grass. For those folks maybe listening, John, and are thinking to themselves, what's the difference? I mean, what is the difference between playing on natural grass and artificial turf?
Well, I mean, I think the argument is that, you know, because artificial surface, it's a much harder sort of playing surface, so it changes the, you know, the way the ball kind of bounces off the surface. It'll change, you know, if you're making a pass, just the speed of the ball off the surface, it really makes it a little bit more difficult. I mean, obviously, if you're tackled on grass versus tackled on an artificial surface, grass is going to be a little more forgiving and not as punishing as when you go down and receive a tackle on artificial turf. So I don't think there's any doubt that playing on grass is far more superior than playing on an artificial surface. But, you know, again, the problem is I'm not sure what the alternative is here. There was only two nations that bid for the Women's World Cup, and no one else is really stepping up to pose as an alternative here. So, I think the women are in a very tough position here.
So officially there's no plan B?
No, there's not. I mean, FIFA is talking about this is going to go ahead, but, you know, the lawsuit doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't think it's going to change anything. And they're not talking about, I mean, I guess the other alternative is to lay down sod over top the artificial surface. But the problem with that is that I don't think that's necessarily an ideal situation as well, because it's not really stable. If it rains, then a lot of these, these sod surfaces will become like sponges because there's no natural drainage there. So they're basically stuck playing on turf.
On the line with John Molinaro of Sportsnet, we're talking about a lawsuit that has been filed in the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal in Toronto, led by some high-profile players on the 2015 Women's World Cup being played on artificial turf. So if there's no plan B, and do we know, first of all, if this lawsuit is going to be completed or if they're going to go through the process before the start of the World Cup?
Yeah, I think they're talking about if all goes well, they'll get some sort of decision by June of next year. And I think the World Cup begins in late June, early July of next year. So it'll probably come to, either be heard or we'll have some sort of decision before the World Cup. But again, I'm not expecting it's going to have any sort of influence either way on what's going to happen, because FIFA and the Canadian Soccer Association are fully determined to play, you know, the World Cup in Canada on these artificial surfaces.
John, in terms of countries putting in a bid for this, what is the reason that no other countries are seemingly looking into it and saying, okay, well, we'll host it?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I don't want to be accused of sexism here, but I really do think it's because there's not as much interest in the women's game as there is in the men's World Cup. And that's not to say that the women's soccer hasn't come a long way in a long time. It absolutely has. But I think there's only a small handful of countries where, you know, the women's game is really, really popular. Germany is one. The United States is one. I think it's really big in Canada here as well. But, for whatever reason, I mean, so you're talking about a limited sort of, pool of nations where interest in the women's game is really sort of growing. And is at a point where I think it could host, you know, a tournament of this size and this magnitude and turn a profit as well. Unfortunately, that's just the bottom line. There's not too many other nations that can really kind of step up and host this event.
Are any games being played in Toronto or are they being played elsewhere? No, none in Toronto.
No, not at all. And that's a sore point of contention here in Toronto because it's has to do with the Pan Am Games. Toronto's hosting the Pan Am Games. And one of the, I think when the city signed the deal with the Pan Am officials, it was that, you know, no other sort of major event could take place in the city at the time. Or I think it was 2 weeks before the start of the event or 2 weeks after the start of the event. Which is too bad because BMO Field, where Toronto FC, the MLS club, plays, is a natural surface. And Toronto is also, obviously, it's the largest sort of media center in Canada. And it seems kind of ridiculous to me that, you know, this massive sporting event, no games are going to take place in Toronto.
So is there a chance that because of this lawsuit, maybe they'll look into somehow rearranging things, moving it to Toronto?
I don't think so. No, I mean, because, again, it's the Pan Am Games is the complication here. And as long as Toronto's going to host that event, I mean, you know, they've got a deal in place with the city that, you know, no other sort of major event can take place. So that's not going to change anything.
So how do you see this playing out? Do you think it's just going to be one of those, hey, look, this is what we have, artificial turf. You either play it or what? You don't play it?
I think that's exactly how it's going to play out. I think, you know, I don't think the women have much merit with this lawsuit because I don't think it's discriminatory. It's just a matter of this was the only option. It should be pointed out, too, that FIFA, it does play other tournaments on artificial surface, both male and female. You know, they hold the every 2 years they hold the FIFA Under 20 World Cup, which is basically the soccer equivalent of the World Junior Hockey Championships. And that's been both for male and female, and those have been hosted on artificial surfaces. In fact, in 2007, it was hosted in Canada, and the majority of the venues were hosted on artificial surfaces. And I do think the Men's World Cup is going to go that way, too. I mean, I think it's not unreasonable to think that, you know, at some point there's going to be a Men's World Cup that's going to be played, maybe not in whole, but in some part on an artificial surface. Because, you know, FIFA is going to more and more cold countries like Russia in 2018. They're going to Qatar in 2022. And, you know, it's going to be hard to maintain grass pitches in those sort of, extreme cold and extreme heat. So, I think that's, as I said, this is something that's going to be taking place more and more in terms of big tournaments playing on artificial surfaces, both for the men and the women.
Before I let you go, John, you kind of just touched on it there briefly, but I was going to ask you about why there aren't more natural grass surfaces here in Canada. I mean, I would assume that it's just not that popular of a sport here in Canada, perhaps being a reason. But are there any other reasons? I mean, is artificial turf more or less expensive to maintain than natural grass, or how does that work?
Well, it's a whole combination of things. I mean, a lot of the venues that they're using, it's going to be the CFL teams are there as well, right? So, I mean, it's, you can't sort of, with the CFL, for instance, in Winnipeg, it's an artificial surface. So it's hard to put in a grass surface that can accommodate both football, talking about CFL football, and soccer, because the gridiron football is just going to absolutely tear up the pitch. And that's not going to be ideal for soccer. Whereas an artificial surface, it can accommodate both without the pitch getting sort of eaten up and and just terrorized by the gridiron football players. The other thing is too is that it takes you know, resources, time, and money to maintain a grass pitch. It's not just a matter of laying sod down and that's it. I mean, you have to have a groundskeeper. You have to actually maintain it. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of expertise. Whereas with an artificial surface, you're just basically laying down the surface and that's it. So there's a whole sort of slew of reasons as to why a lot of the surfaces in Canada are artificial and not grass.
It's an interesting, John. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. No problem.
All right. John Molinaro right there of Sportsnet. He is the chief soccer reporter, and we're talking about high-profile players filing a lawsuit over the Women's World Cup being held in Canada next year, being played on artificial turf. They're saying, well, look, the men played their World Cup in Brazil on natural grass. We should be playing ours, the marquee event in the soccer world, the Women's World Cup, on natural grass as well. It acts differently than artificial turf. The ball acts differently, etc. And they're claiming, because they have filed now on Wednesday, just yesterday, with the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal in Toronto, they're claiming discrimination against women. Is this discrimination against women? Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls and emails straight ahead on 570 News.
When FIFA was considering the bids, and it was known full well that this tournament was going to be played on artificial turf. The other thing too is that Zimbabwe was the only other nation that submitted a bid to host the tournament, and eventually it pulled out because the country at the time was politically and economically unstable. So Canada won this by default.
570 Midday continues with Eric Drost.
All right, welcome back. It is 1:52 here on 570 News Midday. That's John Molinaro, the Sportsnet chief soccer reporter, and we're talking about a lawsuit that has been filed. It was filed yesterday in the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal in Toronto. It's led by elite players. One of the players, U.S. Women's National Team forward Abby Wambach, is leading this lawsuit, saying that it is discrimination that the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup in Canada next year will be played on artificial turf. If the men were playing on real grass, natural grass in Brazil, and that is their marquee event, the FIFA World Cup, this is our marquee event. Why aren't we playing on natural grass? So they're claiming discrimination, and I'm wondering if you think this is discrimination. What gets me about this, because, folks, I don't think this is discrimination at all, and what gets me about it is exactly what John was talking about during the interview. This was known. This was known beforehand, and quite frankly, the other only option was Zimbabwe. Canada won this by default. 519-570-2545 locally, out of town, 1-800-570-5715, star 570 by cell. The email is eric@570news.com. Good afternoon, Terry. How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, your question is it discriminatory? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe it is. First of all, the Men's World Cup would never be held in Canada, for starters. I just don't know what the solution is. What do they expect the organization to do? Wave a magic wand and bring out real grass? I just don't understand. Basically, they have two choices: either play on it or don't hold the tournament. This actual stuff that they do play on now is actually good. It's equivalent to natural grass. It's not like the old carpeted astroturf that they used to use 20, 30 years ago.
Well, the experts are claiming that the ball acts differently, that it's a harder surface, etc. And you know, I understand their point of view, Terry, because you and I both know if anyone is a professional athlete, they're going to want the perfect conditions, right? Otherwise, it throws you off, right?
Yeah, but comparing it to men's soccer, I mean, that's not it's apples and oranges. I mean, aside from the friends and immediate family of these players, nobody watches women's soccer. I mean, you can't compare the two. I mean, it's an unrealistic claim, really. I mean, I don't know.
I agree with you,
much
Terry.
Much ado about nothing.
I agree, Terry, and I don't think it's discrimination either. I just think you bring up the right question. What do you do here? What's the alternative? There's no alternative.
Your guess. Yeah, like your guest said, what is it? Zimbabwe couldn't play it. That was the only other bid that came up because obviously for, you know, certain issues going on down there. I mean, why didn't, like, for example, I know, like you said, Germany, Brazil, these countries are actually popular for women's soccer. Why didn't they put a bid in?
Probably because there's no money in it.
Probably, yeah. Like I said, it's not a comparison.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate the phone call. This is Dave on the line. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for taking my call there. One of the biggest things here is if it's not turf, what's the difference between turf or actual grass? I mean, it makes no difference. And you look at Commonwealth Stadium, for example, in Edmonton, okay, there, it's FIFA standard there, okay? So it can play soccer at international level. So if they're saying it's discriminatory, I disagree there. Because a lot of these fields are FIFA standard. They're because they wouldn't be allowed to if they didn't have at least the standard for turf.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Dave, and I appreciate that phone call. That's an excellent point. You're right. They are FIFA standard. So they've been, I mean, FIFA has been there and said this is a stadium that is worth playing on. And I don't know. Like John Molinaro said from Sportsnet, that a lot of men's sporting events in soccer are also now being played on turf. Natural grass is expensive to maintain. You need the people to maintain it. You need it's people that have expertise in maintaining the grass at professional stadiums. It's more expensive. And you can't swap off the CFL with soccer because, you know, the CFL will tear up the grass and then it's not ideal for soccer. So I don't know what the solution is. I don't think there is one. We'll end off on this. Jim says on the email, hi, Eric, for anyone that says the Jays suck this year, tell them they are being discriminated against because they play on artificial turf as well. That one from Jim. So I don't think that there's a case here. And I think this lawsuit has been filed and it won't go anywhere because what's the option? It's Canada won by default. Zimbabwe was the only other option. And they can't host it because of a political problem that they're having. So we'll follow it, see what happens. 157 here on 570 News Midday. We'll be back again tomorrow from 10 until 2. All News Afternoons is coming up next with Joe Pavia and Laura Carney here on 570 News.